There's just something about Christmas that just brings all of the good stuff up to the surface, isn't there? Something, some sort of amazing power that Christmas has to make everything that isn't quite right about your family all bubble up to the top and feel big and loud and proud. And so this December, I wanted to bring you a little bitty series I call Family Style. It's for people that have imperfect families. And as far as I know, that's pretty much everybody, right? Because fact of the matter is, when things are not quite the way that you wish that they were in your family, it makes it a little bit hard to be the celebratory, happy Christmas people that we all wish that we were when December 25th rolls around. Isn't that right? Things aren't quite right. Maybe you've got some frustrations, some betrayals, some bad attitudes. Maybe what you see up here makes everything that you have look tame. Maybe you'd be lucky to get everybody in the same room or anybody in the same room anymore. And it really doesn't matter what your situation is. Maybe you've got some icebergs lurking under the surface of your family that nobody wants to touch. Maybe everything polishes up and cleans up real good on the outside, but underneath there are some things that everybody knows you steer clear of. You don't push too hard. You don't try to force it because things aren't really that good under the surface. And so that's what family style is about. And here's the thing. This is why I think it's important, because when you have stuff in your life and in your family that isn't quite the way you wish that it was, whether it's a missing romance or whether it's bad attitudes between brother and sister or whether it's unforgiveness or whatever it might be, not only is it kind of hard to have a really great Christmas, but you've got bigger problems than that, haven't you? And the fact is that when the people that are supposed to be the closest to you make you feel more alienated or more like a stranger than the people that aren't as close to you, it's a really, really rotten kind of a feeling. In fact, most people would say that when your family isn't quite what it's supposed to be, you're at risk of feeling kind of alone. Anybody identify with that? Things aren't the way you wish, and you feel kind of alone. And what I want to tell you today, if you don't hear anything else that I say today, is that it really isn't, hear me on this, it really isn't God's plan for anybody to feel or to be alone. And some of you struggle to believe that when I say it. You do, because you have real stuff going on and you don't see the evidence. But I'm telling you, I'll say it again, it's not God's will for you to be or to feel alone. And what I want to do is take you to an old, old history, an old, old story of something in our Bible, this collection of ancient accounts and manuscripts we call our modern Bible. And I want to take you to a place in Genesis 2. It's the very first book of the whole thing. And I know some of you have questions, big question marks about what exactly do I do? How do I think about this old, old story? It's the creation story, Adam and Eve. You probably have heard of it, even if you're not particularly a church person. You might be wondering, I don't know, do I take this literally? Do I take this as a metaphor? Is it kind of some mix of both? What do I do with this? And all I'm going to ask you to do today is just kind of park all of that. Just park all of that for a moment, not worry about all that stuff. And I want you to hear a single statement that God makes, and I want you to just listen to it and ask yourself how much truth is in that statement. That's all I'm asking for today. So I'm going to take you to Genesis 2, and we're in the midst of the creation story, and God has made pretty much everything at this point. He's made the big rock, and he's made the sky and the sun and the light and the water and plants and animals, and finally he makes, guess what, dun-da-da-da, a person. He makes a person. And after every little layer that he adds into this beautiful creation that we now call the world, the earth, after every little thing, it says that God saw that it was what? Good. He makes a thing. He looks. He stands back. I don't know where he stands because he's standing in space. But he looks back and he said, wow, it's good. And what that means is it's good to go. It's done, in my opinion. Everything about this thing is as it should be. I will move on now to the next thing. And so he carries on like that through all the things that he adds. And finally, he gets to the person, and he makes the person. And this is what he said. This is, so far, the first and the only thing that he says is not good. He says, in Genesis 2:18, the Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone." It is not good for the man to be alone. There's something about this aloneness that this man, this person I've just made, will face that is not okay. I can't leave it this way. It's not going to work out. It's not up to my par. It's not good enough for my standard. There's something about this that is not going to be okay. It is not good that this person would be alone. And what I want you to do right now is just make it personal for a second. Instead of just reading, "It is not good for the man to be alone," I want you to sub in a different word, a personal word. I want you to say this: "It is not good for me to be alone. It is not good for me to be alone." I want you to ask yourself, how true is that? Does that ring true for anybody? It is not good for me to be alone. It's easy when you read that old story. Say, oh, he made a guy and his name's Adam, and you know he's going to be a little bit lonely. But translate it to yourself for a second. Oh, it's true. It's truer than true. It's not just true, it feels true. And I want you to ask yourself, think of a time when you actually felt alone. Not just you were alone, but you actually felt it right down to your bones. Like, I feel alone. Maybe you felt disrespected at home. Maybe you felt like nobody was really caring about what you needed. Maybe you felt like your needs were ignored. Maybe you felt just generally unimportant. Maybe you felt like nobody I know gets me. That's important, isn't it? To feel like somebody in the world gets you. Think of a time when things were a little bit like that. Think of a time when you really couldn't think of somebody that was really with you in life. Like you felt like you could count on that person, like they cared about you, like they focused on you some of the time. What was it like to be in that place? It's pretty bad, actually. I don't even want to say the word because it's a little strong, but it feels desperate. Chances are good, if you ever have been in that place or if you are in that place right now, you feel a little bit desperate. You feel like you need to do just about anything to escape that sensation that you don't really have the people with you, that you don't really have a crew with you, that you don't have people behind you supporting you, that you don't have people that you can go to and really feel like they're there for you and you're there for them, that they need you and you need them. If you don't have that, it's a really sour, sick, kind of a twisted up in the stomach feeling. It's very hard to escape. And I think that most people would do just about anything they could think of to get loose of that. Now, God already said, it's not okay. It's not good. Do you agree with God? It's not good. It's not a good place to be. And here's the interesting part. He actually does something about it, right? He doesn't just leave it as it is. Here's a person. I've made him, and he's got nobody. He doesn't just add more pets. He doesn't just, you know, give him more work to do to feel like he's more accomplished. He doesn't just add more cool stuff for him to look at, and there's plenty to do. I mean, this guy is set. Think about it. He's got a job to do, so he's employed. He lives in the most beautiful climate that's ever been, so he doesn't have to think about housing. And he's got endless food to eat that's really good to taste, and it's always in season. Sounds good to you, right? But it's not enough. It's not enough. And so what does he do? He makes another what? A person. He makes another person. Now, if you're following me, you think, oh, well, great, he's got a girlfriend. Here's the thing. It's a trick play. It's a trick play. Like, yeah, Adam, here you go. Here's this lovely, beautiful, healthy, naked woman and enjoy. But that's not all there is to it. Because you don't just get one person. It's the beginning of something bigger than that. It's the beginning of a family. It's the beginning of a family. You don't just get one. You get two, and then three, and then maybe four, five, six. I don't know. What's your fancy? And pretty soon, this person that he's made not only has a buddy, but he's got a whole troop of people following him around who kind of need him and kind of look to him for stuff and probably appreciate it a little bit and probably love to spend some time with him. And he's got these people and they need him. And yeah, they're work and they're demanding a little bit. But here's the thing. He's got them and he's not alone. Of course, at this point, you're probably thinking, I don't know about God's judgment on this one, because if his plan is for me to just have a family and things are going to get better, listen, I already got one of those, and it's not working as well as I think it ought to work. Well, just stay with me for a second. Listen, in the story, it doesn't go all that well for that long either. If you don't remember or you've never heard about this, they have some family difficulties, and by family difficulty, I mean, you know, one brother murders another, and eventually, you know, people are messing around with other people they shouldn't be messing around with and being nasty to each other. And you know, Adam and Eve, they got problems because she's talking him into stuff he doesn't really want to do, but he goes along with it because he's afraid she's going to, you know, just all kinds of stuff is going on. And it's really not that much different from anything that any else of us experiences in real life. But here's the thing I don't want you to do. I don't want you to throw out the plan just because the people aren't perfect. If you've got a family and the people are not perfect, don't throw out God's plan just because people aren't joining in the way that they should be. Don't write anybody off yet. It's not time to do that. Don't walk away from this thing. Don't give up on it. Don't just kick it in the trash can. Don't throw out the plan just because the people aren't perfect. Can you do that? You just hold that in your hat for a few minutes? Yeah. Here's the thing. Just because the people in your family are not quite all the way you wish that they were, sometimes, ever, some of the time, I don't know what your situation is. Just because that's true doesn't mean that your need for a family is any less than it's ever been. In fact, it might even be more. So don't throw out the plan yet. Don't throw out the plan. Because writing them off isn't going to do it. You could write your family off. Probably some of them deserve to be written off. But it's not going to make the aloneness go away, is it? It's not going to make the lack of respect disappear. It's not going to make the heart pain that you feel from people not being concerned or focused on you. It's not going to make any of those things go away. It's not going to make any of those things get better than they are. So don't just write people off, not yet. And don't give up on the idea that you will ever have a group of people that are like family to you again. Because here's why. You need it. You need it. Did you hear me? You need it. I'd be willing to bet that you could think of a few instances where you need it is true. Even though your family hasn't been what it ought to be, you still somehow, deep down, somehow underneath, you realize how much you actually need a group of people to be with you and for you and behind you. You can't really get away from it. You can't escape that that not good factor. You can't get away from it. There's nothing you can do to cancel that out. It's not even in your hands. You've got to do something about it. And I would be willing to bet that you've all got some stories. You can all think of some times when you felt some distance from the people that should have been closest to you. And it may have been physical, or it may have been just an emotional thing. And you, without even really thinking about it, started to seek out that family some other place. You went looking. You felt that need. And who could blame you? Who could blame you for looking for what you need? I mean, if you need something, you need it. You can't do without it. And God says you can't really do without a family. So what did you do? You looked for it. You looked for it. And I just want to tell you right now, I don't want anybody to feel guilty that you went to look for family in the world. I don't want you to feel guilty about that. Like I said, you need what you need, right? But here's the thing. You may have gone looking for it in the wrong place. You may have gone looking for it in the wrong place. In fact, if you think back in your life to some of the times that you went looking for family, you stepped into situations, you made connections with people, you took opportunities, you said yes to things, you just joined in where there was an opportunity. If you think about some of those times, chances are pretty good that you regret some of them. Is that not true? Back when I was in college, when I first moved away from home and went to college, first time I ever really moved away from home, you know, I joined into my resident program. You know, I got in the dorm. I didn't live out of town. And you move in, and they have these RAs there, the resident director guys. And, you know, it's interesting. They all are really trying to help you really socialize and get connected because they think you'll do best that way. And so what do they tell you? They tell you things like, you know, every opportunity you get to do something new, do it. Just say yes. Somebody invites you to a party, go. Blah, 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 blah. Go. You know, get out there. Get out. Get mingle. You know, do everything. Don't turn anything down. Even if you don't even care about that thing, just go. I'm telling you what, that's the worst idea in the world. If you are thinking about going to college, let me tell you what, stay in your room. Just stay in your room, because all the bad stuff is out there. Just stay in your room, you'll be safe. No, that's not really true, because then you'll be alone, and that's not good. We've already covered that. But the problem is, and here's a fact, and I didn't give you a Bible verse to make you believe this, okay? This is just a fact, and I think you believe it's true. We most often take the quickest opportunity, not the best one. Most of the time, that's true. We take the quickest opportunity and not the best one. And the problem with that is, not only is the quickest first chance that gets offered to us not usually the best one, it often is the worst one. And you could probably relate, you could probably think back of many times in your life when you knew that you were lacking something from people. You lacked respect. Maybe you looked for it in the workplace, or maybe you lacked romance and you looked for it from attention from somebody else, or maybe you lacked just general focus from somebody, and so you sought it out from somebody else. You didn't have it from dad, or you didn't have it from mom, and so you looked to it from somebody in your peer group. Or maybe you started doing something that was a little bit risky just because it put you in a place to be around other people that might accept you. Maybe you did something that you kind of, when you look back and you think about it, you say, you know what, that probably wasn't the smartest thing I ever did. Maybe not. In fact, a lot of them. And I would venture to say it's because this is true. We often look for the quickest opportunity, not necessarily the best one. And if you can't see the truth in it in your own life, look around in your friend's life. That's easier, right? You know anybody that kind of got married and they didn't even really necessarily like the person they married, but they felt like they just needed to? You know anybody? Have you ever seen that? You ever see somebody join in with people that they don't even really know if they like, but they're there and they got invited, so they're going to go? You ever see people doing things out of character for them, and it's just there seems to be no explanation of it, but they've got a new group of friends now, and they're rolling with those guys. Have you ever seen anything like that in your friends' lives or your other family's lives? There's something about it. When we get into a place where we feel alone, where we sense that we don't have a group with us that is there, that respects, that encourages, that supports, that listens, that does stuff practically, when we don't feel like that, we would do anything. We would do anything to get out of that situation. We'd make major life decisions that we would never otherwise make. We would travel, we would spend money that we would never ever spend normally. We make decisions that we would never make in our right mind. We do all kinds of everything just to get loose. And when an opportunity comes a knocking, we can't say no. We jump. We go. Take a step. We can't wait. Man, we are bad at waiting. Think about this for a moment. Just about every single household in here has a stove and a microwave. And everybody knows that food cooked on the stove tastes way better than the microwave, right? And yet, what does everybody use? The microwave. It's like 50% as good. But you can't wait. It's like 5 minutes too many. You can't wait. It's desperate. It feels like you gotta do something right about now. And so we jump into all kinds of things as a reaction to what we don't have, because deep down inside we know we need something. We know we need something. There's something that we should have, some respect, some attention, some care, some support, some compassion, some encouragement, and we don't find it where we're at. And so we go looking. And it's not to say that that's all bad, but we have a problem. We have a problem. See, every one of us, it's not just somebody, it's every one of us, almost naturally as a condition, says yes to the first opportunity. When we sense that something's missing, yes, I'll go to that thing. Oh, you give me more hours at work and a promotion. I think I might feel a little bit better about that. I'll jump right into it. You know, oh, I didn't know that this lady was so friendly at work. Oh my goodness, you know, jeepers, how can I say no to stopping and chatting with her in the hallway? How can I say no? How can I say no? And oh my gosh, these guys, these friends at school, these guys never talk to me, ever. And now they're talking to me and they want me to go to this thing. Yeah, I'll be there. Oh my gosh, that was me at college. It was so bad. It was like a train wreck. I mean, when you get to college, you don't know anybody, and everybody in college knows they need somebody, and nobody has anybody, so it's just like a big free-for-all, like, whoa, what are we going to do? Who are we going to be with? And so people would come to my room like, hey, Jimmy James, you want to go out and, you know, check out this party? And be like, yeah, I'll go, whatever, you know, hey, can you drive? Oh, sure, I'll be there, you know, and I just said yes and yes and yes, and I wasted so much time doing so much stupid stuff. Not just time, I wasted money, man. I mean, I went to college and it was expensive. It was just plain expensive. And I'd be missing classes and stuff. Oh, yeah, well, I got to drive these guys out. We're going to have a good time. We'll come back. And I'll just miss accounting class in the morning, you know, for the fifth time in a row. You know, no big deal. All right. So I wasted all kinds of time and money, and I wasted people's emotions, and I toyed with people, and I didn't know how to say no. I didn't know how to look for the right thing. And so I said yes to every first chance and every first opportunity that came along. And I was a mess because of it. And all I'm going to ask you to do today, kind of an unusual start to a series. All I'm going to ask you to do today is to look at how imperfect your family is. Parents, brothers and sisters, maybe you don't even know them. Maybe you never got to know your family for some reason. Look at everything up till now. Your kids, your husband, your wife, your ex. I mean, some of this, oh my gosh, it's going to be painful, some of this. Look at your life and look at what lacks. Look at what's not satisfying you. Look at what you wish was, and then look at the difference between what is and what you wish, and consider where your family has fallen short. Don't spend too much time on it, but just think about it. Some of them are sitting next to you, so be careful, okay? And then ask yourself this question. Where have you been looking for what's been missing? Where have you been looking for what's been missing? Where have you been looking? And here's another one for you. How's it been working out for you? Does it deliver? Does it give you what you really need? Or is it temporary, fleeting, thin, shallow? Where have you been looking? And how's it been working for you? And like I said, this is a little unusual this morning, but I want to start this series out by just asking you a what if. What if God actually has a plan that's better than the solution that you've been looking for? What if his plan is actually better than what you've been seeking? What if he actually has a plan to redeem you and your family and the whole nine yards and make it better than anything that you've experienced yet? That's what I want to get into next week. All right? So I'm going to let you go, and this is kind of a short message for me. I'm sure some of you are relieved right now. But see, that's what this series is about. I want you to consider just how imperfect you are and all the things that you wish were different. And I want to prepare you to be able to celebrate Christmas the way you always have wanted to, in spite of everything that you wish was different. And I'm telling you, it gets better from here. Okay? So I'm going to let you all go. I'm going to pray first. And I want you to think about those two questions. Think about where you've been looking for what you haven't got. Think about it. And think about what's been the outcome so far. Would it be better if something were different? All right. Lord Jesus,